Well, it's my great pleasure once again to welcome into the studio Toby Edmonds. How are you feeling this morning?
It's been a little bit of a long morning so far, but good, not bad, just ready for the weekend again.
Oh, okay. Now, it was spring break last week.
It was.
Did that affect your life?
Personal and business. Personal, you know, my kids are older now, so I don't have to worry about finding things like daycare for them or anything like that. Weren't as able to take much time off as we wanted to in order to go do fun things, but we were able to do a couple of fun things. But business-wise, no, not really. Didn't really see any upward or downward trends one way or the other, so that's good.
Oh, okay. Yeah, moves right along. Well, of course, we're faced with another one of those seasonal changes. Walking across this morning, I noted that things had melted the day before and had then refrozen, and so sidewalks and some parts of the streets had a very, very wonderful sheen on them. And, of course, the projections right now, for the rest of this week, of temperatures to gradually rise and be, during the day certainly, well into the 30s by next week, maybe even quite touching 40. So
I know, I'm so excited.
We're getting there. We're getting there. You know, just before the show here, we were talking about the fact that you have, from time to time, attended a convention or one thing or another associated mostly with the automotive industry. Is that correct?
That is correct. I do two of them a year, one in the spring and one in the fall. So I am headed out tonight for the spring one, headed down to Florida for about 10 days. Not all business, but it's still mostly business, but, I headed down there for another convention for, automotive shop owners and managers and discuss everything automotive and shop related, usually issues of regulations and new proposed bills and legislation. They usually come up at least a couple of times during the talks that we have. It's always very informative. It's always a lot of fun too.
And I'm familiar with going to conferences, conventions. We belong to a National Association of Radio Broadcasters. We'll be going actually to Denver in July, and we've attended many of them. And I come away usually reminded of how insular, how with our own practices and even mindsets, it easy to become in stepping out and visiting another place. I find I usually bring back at least one and usually more things that cause a very significant specific change in what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm guessing you find somewhat similar.
Absolutely. The shop, automotive shop culture up here is very isolated from the rest of the world, and actually from each other too. I'm always surprised when I'm down in California, because there's obviously a lot of shops down in California,
right,
how they can both be competitive. I mean, they're literally sometimes right next door to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But yet they also do get together and they do talk about stuff and they work together, but yet they also compete.
Mm-hmm.
Up here, we have a very to each their own type mentality. There's not a lot of cohesiveness amongst the shop owners up here. It's something that is, to a lot of people who think about it, they probably think, well, obviously you guys are competing. Why would you get together? And, there's lots of reasons for shop owners, even though that they compete, to get together and discuss certain things, because, the industry as a whole is to the benefit of all of us.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching a short video on the internet, actually it was several weeks ago, about how Hollywood portrays the service industry and how it's led to a shortage of people who want to enter into the service industry, because it's the service industry is normally portrayed as a bunch of stupid people, uneducated. One of the points that the gentleman who was hosting this program said, I want you to envision a plumber in your head. Does he have a certain part of his lower anatomy exposed? Is he overweight? Is he rude? Mm-hmm. And, you know, in you know, if you sit back and you think about it, you know, when you think of a stereotypical plumber or a stereotypical auto mechanic, you know, you do tend towards to gravitate towards that stereotypical image of somebody who's uneducated and rude and wisecracking and lack of manners, you know, that kind of stuff. And so as a result, we're starting to see a severe shortage of kids wanting to enter into that type of an industry. But the fact of the matter is that if everybody were to walk out of the service industry tonight and not go to work tomorrow, you know, we would effectively bring the economy to its knees. So, you know, it's in the best interest of people, not just in the service industry, but just in, if, you know, in that type of areas to get together and discuss issues of importance like that. You know, what are we going to do when we don't have kids wanting to enter into shop programs anymore? You right, know, they don't right. want to work on cars. They don't want to do any of that stuff. You know, where does that put us 10 years from now? So, you know, it's even though we are competitors, it's still in our best industry, in our best interest as an industry to get together and work to solve these problems. And that's what the majority of these conventions are about.
So you brought up an interesting question, because I know in some other areas, I've come across this where it could be a place where there are a dozen organizations that do a similar kind of thing, but it takes an effort. It takes an effort typically locally to have a local version of an association. Do you find anything existing in Alaska where shops similar to yours meet together in some way? Is there a statewide association of any sort?
There's not a statewide association. We used to have, the Valley used to have a business development group for automotive technicians for the NAPA Auto Care Program.
Mm-hmm.
They have not been organized for the last couple of years. They disbanded a while ago. In Anchorage, there is a NAPA Auto Care Program for business development. There is a top 20 group out of Fairbanks that meets together fairly regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's also associations like the NAPA Auto Care Program. CarQuest has their version.
Right.
O'Reilly's has their version. So, sure. But as far as anything organized to where people actually get together on a regular basis, at least out here in the Valley, no, there is not.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. I know we brought a representative from NAPA in, and you mentioned CarQuest and O'Reilly, other auto parts organizations, and that that's striking that they would be and of course there's a reason I think why they would be the one wanting to organize and to share development, etc. Very interesting. Are you aware of any other states? You mentioned California. You've been in California a number of times, where such a statewide or local organization or association would exist.
Down in the States, it is definitely a different story. Obviously, I don't live down there, so I don't have a lot of personal experience. But just as several examples, top 20 groups are very popular down there. Business development groups are very popular down there. You'll also find loose associations. You know, maybe it's just shop owners in an area that get together once a month, every other couple of months, something like that, just get together and discuss. As well as other members, you know, ASA, ASC, you know, they get together quite often and will have expos or conventions or group meetings or stuff like that. So there is a lot more opportunities down there in the States for shop owners to get together and discuss issues like this on a much more regular basis than up here. Just because, like I said, there is it's a much different mentality down there. And it's actually one born out of competitiveness.
Mm.
Because, you know, you do have so many shops that are so closely, you know, closely grouped together that you know, by default, you know, you happen to know a lot of the other shop owners in your area just because there is so many of them. And so it is a little bit more of a different scene down there. Absolutely.
Well, I'm thinking that recently there's been legislation here in the state in Juneau being considered that deals with an aspect of the automotive industry, if you will, in this case, discussion about how to regulate organizations such as Uber and Lyft, et cetera, as individual local ride-sharing programs. And there's considerable discussion that involves taxi owners about that, and whether, in fact, for example, that the city of Palmer should have its an ability to regulate, or whether it should be a state-regulated kind of thing. So that's the most recent vehicle-involved legislation I'm aware of. But is there legislation that you are familiar with that's come up statewide that affects your operation that would benefit from kind of an association perspective being presented to legislators, or has there not been much of that happening recently?
You know, when it comes to actual automotive repair, there are a lot of statutes that do govern automotive repair.
Sure.
But for the most part, we're not really, it's kind of an industry that is relatively left alone as long as, you know, we're not making waves. I mean, sure. We don't have a lot of, obviously we have OSHA up here, but you know, we don't have EPA. We have the Department of Environmental Conservation, but the EPA really doesn't have any form of office up here, any form of control. So as far as any legislation that affects automotive repair, like specifically, I'm not aware of anything right now, but the one that does come to the forefront of my mind is the, and I just got an email about this last week, how they're wanting to put a tax on studded snow tires.
Oh, right.
$75 per tire.
Right.
And so, you know, you have, obviously, for various reasons, you have two extremes on that, you know, as far as supporting or against that type of a proposition. So that's the one that I'm most aware of at this current
sure.
time that's causing the most waves.
And there have been some immediate revisions, I thought, to maybe reduce that amount. But it's all tied to that question we've, you know, addressed, and many people note the rutting of the roads, so that very soon after a new pavement has been laid down, it seems there's these parallel tracks that you can see that have somehow been worn into the highway and have been tied, it is said, to basically having studded tires.
Yeah. And I don't actually, my opinion on the matter is first of all, the majority of the time I run studless snow tires on my vehicles.
Sure.
It's just something that I got into the habit of. I prefer them. And I know it sounds kind of silly, but especially during this time of year, what I don't like is listening to that noise, that clicking noise. I hate it. Drives me nuts.
Okay.
So, you know, I prefer studless snow tires, but yes, I also know that there is a lot of people that do prefer studded snow tires. So, you know, on a personal level, it doesn't really affect me on a personal level, but at the same point in time, it would affect a lot of my customers as well as some of my tire vendors.
Sure.
Because some tire vendors they don't carry studded snow tires. I mean, studless snow tires. The majority of their businesses is centered around studded snow tires. So, you know, it is, I do see the purpose behind the bill. On a small level, I do agree with it. And I haven't checked into the bill here lately. So you might be entirely right. They might have reduced the amount of tax. Mm-hmm. Once again, it's got a potentially good purpose. I just think that they need to work on exactly how they're going to finalize it.
Okay. Well, I went off down that rabbit trail with a few questions, but that was interesting to me. I hope to listeners. Did you have other things you wanted to speak about today, though?
Well, you know, the one thing that I did come in thinking of to speak about today is it's been, I was just reading online in one of my publications, one of my magazines that I read for automotive repair shops. And I know my life is so, so interesting. Don't be jealous. But I was just reading the other day about how, you know, a couple years ago, it was a big deal, especially when we were in the recession, of how people were holding onto their vehicles longer, They were, you know, they were taking longer care of them. They were taking better care of them, trying to get them to last longer so that way they didn't have to go out and buy brand new vehicles. And then as the economy started to improve, a lot of experts were speculating, okay, great, now we need to re-gear and kind of rethink how we're going to approach things, because now that the economy is improving, people are going to be less likely to hold onto their older vehicles, and they're going to go out and start buying brand new vehicles again. And what they found is actually the exact opposite. People not only are not, I mean, are new car sales getting better? Absolutely. Yes, they are. But those people that are choosing to hold on to their vehicles, those numbers are staying pretty steady, and they're showing signs of holding on to those vehicles even longer.
Hmm. Well, maybe part of it is that new vehicles really are better. I mean, the new meaning we're looking back a period of time, 3, 4, 5 years ago, that maybe there has been a significant improvement in the longevity possibility of vehicles. We may not have sort of noticed. It may have been gradual, but it may be, and this, of course, keeps being asked the question, were the old cars really built better? We've touched upon that in a variety of ways. But the maintained vehicle these days would seem 200,000 miles.
See, the trick to a newer vehicle is that they are perfectly capable of lasting just as long as the older vehicles. But what they don't have is a lot of leeway in terms of lack of maintenance. You know, back in the older vehicles, you know, you could go for a while without doing an oil change, and the tolerances for certain types of machinery in the engine were very forgiving. Mm-hmm. You know, really, as long as you kept some oil in it and some coolant in it, for the most part, you were fine. Nowadays, that's not the case. You have to make sure you're really on top of your maintenance. And, you know, parts have gotten more expensive. Technology has increased, you know, so when you do go to do some major repairs to your vehicle, it's not going to be the same $200 repair that it was maybe on your 1973 Chevy.
Sure.
You know, it's going to cost you some money. But the fact of the matter is that I have lots of customers who have 200,000-300,000 miles on their cars. And those cars I would buy in an instant over a lot of the newer cars, just because of how well they've maintained them and how the care and love that they've given to these cars, and they're good cars. So, you know, the fact of the matter is that modern vehicles, I wouldn't say one's built better than the other. They're just different. Mm-hmm. And you just need to make sure that you stay up on top of your maintenance if you do want that same type of mileage out of your older vehicle.
Okay.
But then that question comes into play of, okay, so, you know, you do have your car and you've decided that you don't want it anymore for various reasons. Maybe, you know, it doesn't fit your family anymore. Maybe it needs some pretty serious repairs. And money-wise, you just don't want to put the money into it anymore. So what do you do with it at that point in time? Especially, and this topic is definitely more aimed at people who are in a position to where their vehicle is actually broken down.
Mm-hmm.
And the repair is going to be extremely expensive, and they don't want to, they'd just rather just go out and buy a new vehicle. You know, what do you do with it at that point in time?
Well, and of course, you've posed, it's broken down, do you buy a new vehicle? Put a lot of money. And of course, you've also sort of hinted at there's the whole large middle ground of buying a used vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And that that is the real big question mark. You know, because from a financial standpoint, the really interesting thing is to say it's a heavy hit to put into an older vehicle, which is going to keep getting older. It's also a pretty heavy hit to commit to a new vehicle. And so there's that middle place where there's a vehicle that's in good condition, as you've described, one that's been maintained well, that can be purchased for probably half as much or less as a brand new vehicle. So the question is, what's the best way to make a decision when you're faced with that kind of option? Because one, you know what your own vehicle is, and presumably the cost for repairing it. But there's so many new and so many used vehicles out there. Just sorting through that, it seems like that's where people give up and say, "Oh, I'll just get a loan and buy a new one or lease a new one."
You know, that is such a I do not envy people when they're in that situation. Just because I have seen it so many times before, where somebody will decide to not put any more money into the vehicle that's broken down, and then they go out and they buy a used vehicle, and unfortunately, lots of times, people buy a used vehicle before they get it inspected by an automotive repair professional. And, you know, they'll bring the vehicle in maybe after the fact, after they've bought it, or lots of times we'll get people who bring a used vehicle in because they want the fluids changed out and spark plugs done and that kind of stuff. Or maybe they actually experience a problem right off the bat, you know, one of the three situations. But they'll bring the vehicle in only to discover that the used vehicle is almost in, you know, their new used vehicle is in almost as bad a shape as their older broken down vehicle. And, you know, it's situations like that where, you know, it's just so heartbreaking to see it, because lots of times, you know, somebody who goes out and puts in the time and the effort into buying a new used vehicle, and they're so excited about it, and they're like, this is such an awesome car. And then they bring it in for something simple only to find out that it's not something simple. And it's yet another vehicle that's going to be expensive for them to repair. So, you know, it's really comes down to the individual. And I always tell people, you know, if you're going to be paying for something, whether you're putting money towards an older car and it's in the form of car repairs, or you're putting money towards a brand new car in the form of a loan for a new vehicle, make sure it's something that you love. As long as you love it. And we flat out refused to do major repairs to some people's cars, because in the course of talking to them and what they wanted out of the vehicle and how they felt about it, you know, they didn't like the vehicle, or they were going to spend thousands of dollars only to turn around and sell it because they didn't want the vehicle. You know, and when you reach that point, you know, with your vehicle and you're putting money into it, no matter how good the repair is, or, you know, no matter how good the repair experience is, you're always going to be angry at it.
Right.
And lots of times that anger does reflect back on the shop. So, you know, it's if you're going to pay money towards something, make sure it's something you love.
Okay. So as you were talking, I'm thinking, okay, I'm aware, for example, that people very often shop for a house if they are moving into an area, or they're moving up, they've been in an apartment, want to buy a house. And so there are real estate brokers who may have their own listings, so-called, or may be able to very much aware of the market. And a real estate broker charges when a house is found and the deal is completed and so on. And that's a big amount of money. It's possible that we're talking, you know, $200,000 or maybe a little less, but quite a bit more. But in the automobile buying or truck buying world, it's interesting to me that there are a few, but there really aren't too many car brokers who are out there that will work with someone to have them identify their needs, their financial status, their qualification for things, and make some encouraging recommendations about how to go about and do this. More the individual goes to a dealer or a lot or to Craigslist and has some idea and picks a car out and then deals one-on-one there. I think there's a market, a niche market here for someone who would assist people in purchasing cars.
You know, there are automotive brokers for hard to find vehicles, rare vehicles, collectors, you know, high-end vehicles. But, you know, a service like that costs money.
Sure.
And normally when you're an individual that's out there to buy a used vehicle for a good price, the last thing you're looking for is to spend even more money on the services of somebody And a lot of people, believe it or not, a lot of people actually feel that they're perfectly capable and qualified to go out there and make these decisions all by themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I'm not saying they're not, but I see what you're saying. You know, having the services of an expert, somebody who you know really listens to somebody and say, you know, I hear you, you know, I hear what you're saying. You're saying two-door sports car, but I'm looking at the size of your family and thinking maybe we might want to think small SUV.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Somebody to kind of bring these decisions
more
back
of a counselor,
into
yeah.
Right.
And when you're talking in many cases of an amount that's going to be $30,000 to $40,000 or more, this is a substantial commitment. And mm-hmm. As you're pointing out, committing to something that in your life with a family makes a huge difference if it works to fit everybody in, to do the things you want, and not to be a very expensive operation for you down the road.
Yep. Cars, just like, you know, everything else in life, you know, you have what you know, there's what you need and then there's what you want. And the two things might not necessarily be the same.
Sure. Well, once again, Toby, we have managed to somehow spend roughly half an hour and interesting to me, and I hope to listeners, dialogue about vehicular industry, automobiles, trucks, all those kinds of things. Any last comment before we finish up?
Nope, I think we're good. As always, I, in the same way, I always encourage people that if you have any questions, problems, if you are looking for a used vehicle, I am open for advice. I'm not a broker, but I definitely have a lot of experience in the matter. So, you know, if you have any questions, anything automotive, always feel free to visit us at Edmunds Import Auto down by the fairgrounds, right next door to the Noisy Goose. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on internet. Pretty much anywhere that you look for businesses nowadays, you can find us there. We're always happy to help.
Okay. Well, thank you, Toby Edmunds. We've finished up another edition of You Ought to Know.